This is the one with Peter Cushing.
And where Susan's an actual child.
And Babs is her sister.
And Ian's Buster Keaton.
And the Daleks are in Technicolor.
And the Thal look like the children of Ziggy Stardust.
It's called Doctor Who and the Daleks.
Here we go!
We're embarking on a voyage all through time and all through space,
counting Daleks, Thal and Ood, and the Cybertronic race.
And Torrens look like taters, and Silurians all have wonky scales.
And the Doctor has a TARDIS, we're reviewing all his tales.
Who back when?
Reviewing all of who there is.
Who back when?
Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please.
Episode by episode, we're trudging down this temporal road. Come join us on this odyssey. What other choice could there be than who back when?
Who back when?
Hello, and welcome to a very special bonus episode of Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast. I am Ponkin, and joining me tonight is the Rawmeister.
Good evening. What type of day it is for you?
How you doing, Rawmeister?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. I'm reeling from the movie I've just watched.
Yeah.
I feel weird calling it a movie.
Yeah, it's like, it's in the most liberal sense of the word, it is a movie.
The most movie-ish thing about it was the opening credits. And even then, that's like a very outdated form of movie. Opening credits.
Yeah, well, it looked like a really, really budget James Bond intro.
Yes! What, I'm going to have to look at my notes to see what I called it. I called it James Bond porn jazz music.
That's pretty much hitting it on the head.
I liked it though. I want to get it on my iPod.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was good. It was a bit of big band music with some weird swirling space kind of noises.
It's the kind of music that you want to listen to in the background whilst taking like a really, really foamy bubble bath.
Yeah. Are you surprised they didn't go forward with this theme for the rest of Doctor Who? Because it's clearly,
perfectly canonical, this whole thing. Yeah. Oh, yeah, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, today we are discussing Doctor Who and the Daleks.
Yeah.
Freaking Peter Cushing as the Doctor. Before we like jump into Beeskow and all that shit, what did you think of Cushing as the Doctor?
I found him quite enjoyable, actually. He did a decent job. it's weird because we'll get into it, but he's playing another character, essentially. I found his performance perfectly adequate.
Oh, good. I'm very glad to hear it. I thought he was all right as well, but he's very, like, much more of a child-friendly kind of Doctor.
Yes, yeah, he
the
is.
The whole thing is very child-friendly.
Still a massively selfish cunt in many places. They kept that going.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. So, ladies and gentlemen, this is basically, you'll know this probably, but just in case you don't, it is a remake of a classic Hartnell serial called The Daleks. It's the second Hartnell serial. And because Flapjack, and I already reviewed it, we are probably not, we don't really know, we're going to wing it, but we're probably not going to go into like massive detail as far as plot is concerned. So what I would suggest is go back and listen to that Who Back When episode. So listen to that review and then, you know, you can do a whole comparison thing if you like. And also, seriously, for the love of fucking Christmas, just watch the original Hartnell serial because it's approximately 7 billion times better than this shit.
Yeah, I mean, essentially we have pretty much the same plot, so this is going to be large ridicule.
Shall we do a Beeskow?
Let's do a Beeskow.
It's time for the Nighttime's Tongue of Who.
The Doctor and his two grandchildren, Barbara and Susan, are joined by Barbara's boyfriend, Ian, and head to the planet Skaro.
There, they meet the evil Daleks and the good-natured Thal, who are locked in a civil war.
And then they immediately start meddling.
Hilarity ensues. Beeskow over. You are welcome, people. Okie dokie. How do you want to do this? You know what? Let's just go through the thing.
Okay.
Ignore fucking detail and just pinpoint whatever it is that is on screen pissing us off.
Yeah, I mean, the devil is in the detail in this.
Oh, by the way, I've got some killer trivia for this.
Stupidly, oh good, I look forward to it.
Okay.
I think this is not the only one of these Peter Cushing movies. I believe there's another one.
There is another one, yes, that's true. Well, and the next one is also a remake of a Hartnell serial.
Cool. Well, so opening James Bond porn jazz music aside, the first shot of this is a glorious image of Susan reading the most gigantic copy of Physics for the Inquiring Mind.
Yeah.
Despite the cover being approximately A1 size, it only looks like it's about 20 pages long.
Oh, nice. I didn't notice that.
I wasn't even sure if there was a book inside there. It just looked like a loose cover.
I'll have to screenshot that for the website. I did not even pick up on that.
Oh, well, it's a beautiful image.
Well, she's reading Physics for the Inquiring Mind. Babs is there as well. Babs, now, by the way, infinitely more vulnerable than before, is reading The Science of Science.
Oh, shit, we didn't even discuss the child that is Susan now.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yes, yeah. Exactly. She is a child.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't even actually realize that this was necessarily going to be Susan until a couple of minutes in.
Yeah, know? When they referred to her as Susan. But the actress playing her at the time was 11 years old.
Fuck.
I don't know how old she's meant to be in the film. I'm guessing around about 11 anyway.
She was like 12 or something.
Yeah, she's a freaking child. Like, they've actually done it this time. Original Susan was played by a roughly 25-year-old or something like that.
She's meant to be, what, 16?
16, yeah, exactly. And, go on with the intro, because the next character, Babs, massively vulnerable, reading Science of Science. Who is she?
What?
She's Barbara Who.
Yes, she is, yeah. Well, we don't even know that yet.
Oh, yeah, okay, that's true.
I had a glorious moment when I realized that she was Barbara Who, when I realized that the Doctor was, in fact, Doctor Who.
Doctor Who. So this is his surname. he has an actual, like, PhD or MD in something.
Yeah. He's like John Who or Alan Who. Or first name is.
I think in the first review that Flap and I did, we were Hugh Who. Perfect. That should be his name.
I have a note slightly later where I just said, "Shit, the tiny one is Susan." Yes, move on to Doctor Who.
Doctor Who, played by Peter Cushing, is reading some sort of comic book.
He's reading The Eagle, which my dad had a bunch of annuals for. I never actually read them, but they're like adventure stories for, young boys.
Yeah, it looks like a Flash Gordon-esque type thing.
Yeah.
The Hardy Brothers, or Hardy Boys, or whatever it's called.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad he's knows how to recreate.
And he is absolutely fucking just enticed by the story. Doorbell rings, Ian enters.
Boyfriend Ian enters.
Yeah, so now Ian is Babs' boyfriend. In the original, they were teachers. They were Susan's teachers.
Yeah, now they're just horny teenagers, apparently.
Are they teenagers?
25-year-olds or something.
Yeah, exactly.
They're young now, anyway. They're just, early courting kind of thing.
Yeah, that's true.
But we get a glorious pratfall, which... Like, hoping this will be a mainstay, I was not disappointed.
That he keeps falling over and...
Pratfall. He goes colliding straight into the wardrobe, smashes his head into it. Was it recovers beautifully with, all right, you got me this time, which is just the caliber.
What does that refer to?
You know how when you're watching sitcoms or movies or something, and you think, oh, fuck, I wish I was that witty in real life?
Mm-hmm. That never happens in this film.
I think was far more the kind of awkward, embarrassed comment you might make, just something that doesn't mean anything and you really wish you'd said something better. He's a realistic character, I guess.
Really?
No, he's not at all. He's frigging, what did we call him? Fatty Arbuckle? Not Fatty Arbuckle.
You were saying Buster Keaton, Charlie Chaplin.
Buster Keaton,
before we press record, yeah. Absolutely. By the way, there is a Riff Tracks version of this film, which, because I watched the regular theatrical release freaking ages ago, thought I was going to do this podcast ages ago, and then when that didn't happen, I figured I just couldn't hold it anymore. I had to watch the Riff Tracks version, and in that they refer to him as Dick Van Dyke. Or actually, sorry, I think they refer to him as Dick Van Dyke.
That's not too far off the money. Apart from everything else, he kind of looks like him.
That is true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually...
The accent would have improved this.
All right, Governor.
Yeah.
I have a little bit of trivia about our main cast.
Oh, yep. Go ahead.
Okay, so check this out. Jenny Linden, who plays Babs, she was a 5-time storyteller on a program called Jackanory. Are you familiar with that?
Oh, very much so, yeah. That was... I think they told classic stories for the most part, but it was the weirdest concept for a TV show. The premise of Jackanory was the show would start and you would have some semi-famous person for the week was sit in a chair and effectively read you a story.
Okay.
And the story would largely be depicted, I think, with drawings, like just camera over still drawings, and cuts back to the person sitting reading the story from a book. Each story would take, you know, 5 episodes, one for each day of the week, and then it would be a different famous person each week.
Oh, wow.
But what a friggin' weird concept for a show. I mean,
that is a little bit weird.
What would happen in the sort of ADD culture we have now? Actually, someone sitting reading you a story on TV.
Is it like kind of a Reading Rainbow type thing?
I don't know what that is.
With Geordie LaForge?
No, I'm not familiar.
Anyway.
Reading Rainbow?
I've never seen it either. Never mind, check this out. Okay, here's the weird trivia circular connection. So Jenny Linden was a 5-time storyteller on Jack and Nori. A 39-time storyteller on Jack and Nori was Bernard Effing Cribbins.
Really?
Yeah. Bernard Cribbins, who is like a Doctor Who legend, and who actually replaces Ian in the second Peter Cushing movie.
Wow.
So that's kind of a fun circular trivia thing.
I'm a bit upset to learn that Ian's going to be replaced in the next movie.
Oh, yeah, I know. Spoiler alert. Okay, check this out. Roberta Tovey, who plays Susan, she sang a song called Who's Who for the 30th anniversary documentary Doctor Who 30 Years in the TARDIS, and her dad, George Tovey, appeared in Pyramids of Mars classic Tom Baker episode as someone called Ernie Clements.
Wow.
Yeah. Not done yet. Check this out. Roy Castle, who plays Ian. Sorry, I'm bogarting the microphone at the moment. But Roy Castle, who plays Ian, he was a... I'm now reading this straight from IMDb trivia. He was a longtime presenter of the BBC TV programme Record Breakers.
That's where I know him from. I, you know, he seemed familiar, and I knew the name Roy Castle from somewhere, but I couldn't place it. And
he's actually famous.
Well, Record Breakers is a pretty big thing on British kids TV. He would get together with a bunch of kids and try and break some
kind of record
in something.
Well, unsurprisingly, he holds several world records himself in tap dancing.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay, well, check this out. Final trivia bit for now. This was written by Milton Subotsky, whom I'm sure you're very familiar with.
All of his. Didn't he write Moby Dick?
Milton Subotsky wrote, among other things, Tales from the Crypt.
Oh, okay.
Which starred Peter Cushing.
There we go.
Boom.
6 degrees of Peter Cushing. 1 degree of Peter Cushing.
Anyway, so, all right, let's go on with the plot. What happens? Or what is annoying? What's the next annoying bit?
Well, I have soft centers and never put anything on a chair. Why is everything on their seats in this house?
Yeah. Oh, and also, like, okay, so Ian sits down on some soft-centered chocolates that he brought for his girlfriend, whom he absolutely wants to bang throughout this entire film. Yeah. And then he nearly sits down on the very last, like, components of, spoiler alert, the TARDIS, which is completed. Like, it is, the Doctor has finished it. It is perfectly constructed, has just placed it on like a Chesterfield, and then sits down to read a comic book instead of actually installing it into the fucking TARDIS.
Yeah, I don't know what they had planned for the evening, whether they were going to go on this expedition anyway, or it's just purely because it comes up in conversation. Like, this setup makes no sense. There's like crucial bits of dialogue seem to be missing here. I mean, hang on. So the Doctor, Doctor Who.
Doctor Who, of course.
There's the only one time we'll be calling him Doctor Who, except maybe in the next movie.
Yeah.
Ian nearly sits down on this thing, and Doctor Who just says, "Oh yeah, this is my diddly what's it." The new component, my latest invention. So he invented the TARDIS.
Yeah, exactly. He's a total normal human, and he is an inventor. He built the TARDIS.
Does this lead us to believe that he's actually a human in this?
Yeah, isn't that it? Like, he's a normal human.
Reproducing dude. Is he a widower?
I guess so, and also childless.
Yeah, they seem to be living with him. So
yeah, exactly.
Tragic backstory of Doctor Who.
Yeah, we never find out. Well, on the other hand, we never find out, well, we still haven't found out anyway in the original series, but...
Yeah.
But here there's no backstory. But also, further to that, we never find out what the shit Babs and Ian do. I mean, like, they should have jobs. They should do something.
Yeah. But I guess there is barely even time because we don't explore their regular lives at all. So
no, that's true.
Like, there are just too many questions about their actual lives.
Yeah. But
my biggest question was, Ian just addresses him out of nowhere as Doctor Who. He hasn't even been properly introduced to this guy. Like, he says, this is my granddad, and he's just like... And then he's just, yes, come out and see my TARDIS. Like, well, I'm not sure if that's a good idea, Doctor Who.
Yeah, what?
And, okay, there's, I suppose you can extrapolate that presumably, you know, he's dating Barbara Who.
Yeah.
And he knows that she lives with her grandfather.
Who has a PhD.
So, yeah, I guess that's explicable, but it didn't stop me going, what the fuck? Very loudly.
Okay, so they go and see the TARDIS. The TARDIS, by the way, does not have any chameleon circuitry in this film. Like, it just, it's a time machine.
It's but just a thing shaped like a
police box. Yeah, so why is it shaped like a police box now?
No apparent reason. Yeah.
And why is it so fucking messy inside?
It's a piece of shit inside. It's completely, everything's just tacked on, super glued, I don't know.
There's just wiring everywhere. It's like you should not bring a child into this place because she's clearly going to get ensnared in these wirings.
You're going to get electrocuted just touching anything inside there. But Ian seems very, very accepting of all this very quickly. He takes it in his admittedly clumsy stride, you know.
Yeah. With this whole introduction to the...
I was just going to say, there's not a whole lot of questioning of this shit. Just apart from his initial bemusement about the size of the TARDIS inside,
he's
otherwise pretty accepting of their explanations, like Susan explains how it is, and he's just like, oh, okay.
Exactly. All of a sudden, it's a time machine. No, that's fine. Also, by the way, like, it's not actually that much bigger inside. Like, it's he should say, like, oh my god, it's slightly larger on the inside.
I don't know, man. I mean, it's bigger than the room I'm sitting in now.
Okay, fair enough. Fine. But it's not like the TARDIS is nowadays.
It's big enough that you would go, what the shit, when you walked in. I mean, really, any size difference is going to throw you.
Okay, yeah, that's true.
And although Ian does lack spatial awareness, so...
Clearly. Well, he lacks a lot of things in this film.
Yeah.
Okay, so... I would say the entire introduction to this film is basically just like, let's get it over with mega quickly so that we can get the main cast to Skaro, because that's what everyone just wants to see.
Yeah, let's not linger on the details or even explaining this setup at all. Let's just... I must have been to be a Doctor Who fan actually watching this at this time, and everyone in the cinema is going, what the fuck?
What the fuck is this? Why am I watching this garbage?
In a cinema, actually. One moment in particular made me think that, but we'll get to it.
Okay. Oh, I look forward to it.
Yeah.
Okay, so... Bada bing, bada boom, Ian accidentally... Oh, Babs joins him in the TARDIS. Ian is sexually assaulted by Barbara Who and accidentally stumbles upon a lever that then sends them to the future and to the planet Skaro. Actually, we don't even find out that it's the future. We have no idea.
We don't find out very much at all, really.
Do they even call it the planet Skaro?
I don't think so. I'm pretty sure they didn't.
Okay.
And I guess how would they have known anyway? Unless... some point Thal mentioned it, maybe.
Well, just like with any other planet in the universe, everyone speaks English anyway, so at some point someone could have dropped it into conversation.
Yeah, I mean, you could just as easily think you're just on Earth in the future and there's been a massive nuclear fallout.
Bingo, yes. So
nuclear.
Where's Gene Hackman when you need him?
It's easier to say.
Okie dokie. So now they're on the planet, blah, blah, blah. We get the same shtick as we did with the original Dalek serial. They wander around, they find a flower.
Made of marzipan.
Made of marzipan, which, by the way, has an actual name. Like, it's an earth lily.
Yeah, it wasn't just a tulip or whatever. It had a long Latin name or something.
Yeah, trivia alert. Apparently, Peter Cushing was like a major botanist, a spare time botanist, and he contributed the name to that. That's also just from IMDb trivia. But anyway, it's an identifiable earth flower.
Okay. Well, it looked delicious.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's beautiful. We get the weird, what's it called? The Maya Beast? No, it's not the Maya Beast. Oh, whatever it is. The petrified monster.
They didn't really even say what that was. We just had an excessively loud scream from Barbara.
Yeah.
The screaming in this movie is all excessively loud, and it's mostly coming from her.
Yeah, true.
But it's like the soundtrack levels just jump up, and, you know, I could turn the volume on my laptop down for fear of waking the neighbors and screaming so loud.
Also, this thing looks like a miniature Triceratops.
Yeah. It was completely inconsequential, though, if I remember. I don't think we really...
Oh, yeah, yeah. The same with the Daleks one.
And we get a good old crack of, that had a soft center too.
Oh, nice. Oh, well, you know what? Thank God that whole joke in the beginning totally paid off.
That was maybe the wittiest moment in the movie.
So then they find a city, which in the film is actually just a building. Like, yeah. They go like, oh, there's this massive city. No, it's not. It is one building, dude.
And the exterior of the building also looks like an interior until they pull back and we see the rocks.
Oh, yeah. Right? Yeah, yeah.
I thought inside a building when they first showed up. But they spy a city, and given that they can see with their binoculars that the city's deserted, I'm not sure quite how they manage that, considering you could see one building.
Yeah.
And they're surrounded by dead things, you know, dead forest. I'd be starting to worry about the radiation.
Yeah,
they haven't even whipped out their Geiger counter or anything yet.
No, exactly. Contrary to the original serial, where they do, or rather, they don't, but we the audience, get to see a Geiger counter go into, like, danger zone levels as they exit the TARDIS.
Yeah, here I'm just thinking, they're maybe just thinking about why this place is uninhabited and dead-looking.
Yeah, maybe, yeah. Put on, like, a face mask, at least. Anyway, so... go for it.
I've written, I can't remember what this signified, but I've written creepy moment between Doctor Who and Susan.
There are plenty of pseudo-pedophilic moments between those two.
Well, I think that must have been one of them, because I felt the need to record it, but I can't remember now.
Okay. Well, anyway, they're going to go to the city. Before they do that, we get the same spiel as in the original serial. They find this little case of vials and pills that someone, spoiler alert, the Thal, have left outside the TARDIS. And yet again, they go, you know what? Fuck it. We don't need to investigate this. We don't need to assume that there is someone alive around. We're just going to put that back in the TARDIS and head off without taking any of this medicine.
Yeah. And so we get the... I want to call him the Doctor, but I've decided we're calling him Doctor Who.
He's
Doctor Who in this movie.
Yeah.
So Doctor Who... hides the mercury and decides they need to go exploring the city to go and find some mercury.
Yeah, exactly. Ooh, one thing, I'm just checking my notes here as well. There's one thing that we left out, and that is, just as before, a Thal... Well, in the original serial, as they're walking back to the TARDIS, a Thal taps Susan on the shoulder, and then no one believes her afterwards. In this case, the fucking Thal, like, Kato-style jiu-jitsu chops her. Like, it's mega violence.
Yeah, that seems out of keeping with the way they present themselves later.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Anyway, so they go to the city, they split up as per usual, and...
And they split up. In this case, the Doctor actually takes Susan with her, which is reassuring.
Yep.
And, I don't know why they split up, Phil, and it seems like a stupid thing to do in a completely foreign land, you know, on some other planet. I don't know why it split up. The note I have as they arrive there, so the first place they hit up is the Modern Art Gallery.
Oh, because they have all of those, like, golden tinfoil statues on the wall?
Yeah, they just look like sculptures, right?
Oh, it's really weird.
To be. Also, I can't remember where this comes in, but watch the friggin' lava lamps.
Yes, I know. Oh, I've got that in my notes as well.
I can't remember where they show up, but...
In the control room, there are actual lava lamps.
Yeah, which begs the question, are these supposed to be standing in for some futuristic technology?
Presumably.
Decoration, the Daleks just really like lava lamps. What the fuck? Surely people in, what year was this, 1965? Surely people had seen lava lamps, they weren't going to be taken.
For a control room that clearly cost a lot of money to create, right? Like, the set is fucking spectacular. For something that is that expensive...
That's completely undermine it by putting some friggin' lava lamp.
Exactly! Why would you do that?
Not even like a big lava lamp, just a regular one you could buy in Argos.
Yeah, and in fact, let's get three of them and and put them next to each other for no reason, on like a pedestal.
Yeah.
They reappear later on as well, spoiler alert, when Susan's writing the little letter on like a piece of cling film.
I think they showed up a few times.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, in my notes, I have written, there are actual lava lamps.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, so, yeah, instead of finding a lab, this time they find a control room. Babs, in the meantime, gets captured, just as before.
Screams really loudly again, and then silence.
Yeah.
She's so loudly and then doesn't make any more noise.
And then, Kablamatron, Daleks appear, and in this case, the Daleks are in Technicolor. They are every color of the rainbow.
Yeah, well, three colors.
So, okay,
yeah.
Three colors. There are, like, the menial light blue ones.
Yeah.
Which seem to be the most popular.
Yeah, then we have the red one, and what was it, a gold one?
Yeah, black and gold, I think.
Yeah.
Red and gold and black and gold, and one of them has... Oh, actually, some of them have the regular Dalek plunger, and others have, like, a little claw.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, which makes you think, like, how shit is it to be one of the plunger Daleks? Like,
yeah.
You know, in a world where you are allowed to have a claw, you are able to have a claw, there are a lot of them just walking around, essentially only able to unclog toilets.
Yeah. I noticed the Dalek talking in this, massively inconsistent in the speed at which they talk. Like, you've got one Dalek's, you know, taking like 10 seconds to say the word city. And then you have another Dalek saying, get in here now.
I have a piece of trivia for that.
Right.
So did you see the Daleks now have like these little lights that blink whenever they speak?
Yeah.
Like the little Dalek ears. So the guy who directed the film, can't remember his name, Gordon Fleming, I think. Anyway, doesn't matter. The guy who directed it at the time, he wasn't aware of the fact that they were blinking in sync with the speech. So then when the Dalek voice was added in post-production, the lights were completely out of sync with the speech. So the dudes who were trying to edit everything together had like the hardest time, which is why in some takes they have to stretch out the speech and sometimes they have to condense it into like 2 second blasts.
Oh, that's pretty cool piece of trivia, because I was really bewildered at why they did that. Like, to make any sense. I just thought it was shitty acting.
Well, okay, let's face it. There is quite a considerable amount of shitty acting in this film as well.
There is. Yeah, let's not pretend otherwise. I like the Daleks are a bit bigger, though. They're slightly more imposing.
They are, aren't they?
Yeah.
I think so, yeah. Anyway, so now they're all captured, and they're suddenly suffering the consequences of the radiation.
Yeah, we got a bit of dialogue. Like, how do you feel? Sort of weak and... This is from Barbara. Sort of weak and giddy. I had to write, so no change there then. That's fair, considering I spent not very much time with this character, though I'm already exasperated. Yeah.
Barbara, by the way, okay, she's younger and way hotter than original Babs, but screenshot on the website, people, 21 minutes into this film, they have perfectly emulated original Babs' haircut, because it is enormous. I mean, like, she's essentially a chia pet. It is fantastic.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll check that out.
So anyway, they're now suffering the consequences of the radiation. Susan has to go back to the TARDIS to retrieve the vials.
Yeah. Can I say the radiation sickness here seems to come on a lot more suddenly and abruptly. There's like no hints of it beforehand in this. There were in the original.
Yeah, and the second...
Like, oh, suddenly, oh yeah, we're feeling shit and we're going to die.
Yeah, that's exactly. And just as quickly does it disappear. Because like, no, wait, hang on. No, it's not the radiation sickness. Because like Ian gets blasted by some of the Dalek fire extinguisher weapons.
Yeah, and, well, that confuses things, actually, because he gets that, so he's already sort of falling about all over the place, even more than usual.
He's sort of temporarily paralyzed.
Yeah, but then the others are also feeling weak and giddy.
Yeah, apparently. Exactly. Then when Susan leaves, kablamo, Ian has no problem walking around again.
Oh, they said he would, the Daleks did say he would recover from it. He said, like, they said...
No, that's true. That is totally true. But isn't it a little bit convenient, like, they're looking for a volunteer to go back to the TARDIS? Ian can't stand up. They pick Susan. Susan leaves. Ian gets up and starts tap dancing.
Well, I think he just didn't want to leave.
Oh, yeah, exactly. My point. Such a chicken.
Yeah. He grows a little bit over the course of the movie. My next note, what the fuck is David Bowie doing here?
Explain.
I just thought, that looked a little bit like David Bowie. I mean, not that much. That was my first thought. But I think Ziggy Stardust would be more accurate.
I like that. That's very nice. I've got him down as a Priscilla Queen of the Desert reject in my notes.
Also valid.
In the original serial, the Thal are absolutely effing stunning people. Like, they're all beautiful. The dudes are all mega hunks, which is why Flap and I constantly refer to them as hunks numbers 1, 2, and 3 or whatever. And the chicks are all gorgeous women in swimsuits. Here, should say, the women still beautiful, but the dudes, they look ridiculous.
They all look the same.
Okay, yes, they all look the same, but they've got like this weird makeup.
Yeah, it's not a good look.
Oh, absolutely not.
If you had to choose between a Thal or a Dalek, though, you'd probably still, you know.
What, you mean to bang?
Well, yeah.
I wouldn't know where to put it in the Dalek. On the other hand, he does have a plunger, or they have I'm assuming that all Daleks are male, by the way. They do have plungers, and you never know, get creative.
I think that's pretty sexist, you just assume they're all male.
What? Have you ever encountered a female Dalek?
No. What? I think they have, like, a pink one. Hilarious. But this is me mocking the way TV portrays things, by the way. I'm not saying pink is a woman's color. TV thinks that.
Saved it. So yeah, this Thal, in the serial, in the original serial, this was hunk number one. Here he is just a Thal, and his name is Elodon. And I have a tiny little bit of trivia for this dude. He also appeared in an actual Doctor Who serial, namely The Mythmakers, which is a Hartnell serial, as someone named Paris.
Paris.
Actually, that might be Paris as in mythological. I'm thinking Troy and whatnot.
Ah, okay.
Awesome.
Yeah, cool.
Pretty rad.
Hoping he'll deliver a stellar performance there as
as he did in this one.
I feel like it's like every time someone who's in this.
So he then gives the vials. He doesn't give vials to her. He doesn't give extra vials to Susan, right? Because in the original serial, he does.
He did, but it stops being a plot point because the Daleks just take everything off her when she gets back, and then they let them administer it anyway. So it's completely pointless.
True.
Yeah. He does say, "Here's some more in case they take it off you," but then she's hiding the extra.
Okay.
So
all right.
It doesn't serve the plot at all. It's just like a bit they forgot to edit when they were rewriting the script. It seems no point in having it there. It's Chekhov's vials, not used. I don't know.
I like it.
I have a note here that says Susan makes obscene gestures. Again, I can't remember what that's referring to.
Okay, I will see if I can screenshot that. Anyway, so now we're back. As you said, the Daleks allow them to use the Thal drugs anyway, so they're going to be completely fine. And
I don't get why they allowed them to use them, though, after they were like, no, we will not let them use them. Let them die.
Exactly. Yeah, we do not need them. Exactly. It's Dalek 347 and 348 chatting again. And this is, in my opinion, there are actually only two really nice, sort of cinematographically speaking, nice shots in this entire film. And one is when they're looking at the main crew through the CCTV.
Yeah, that was quite good.
That's very nice. Like, we see them in colour, then we pan out, and it's back to, like, the black and white video footage that the Daleks are looking at on the CCTV cameras.
I like that the Daleks have black and white CCTV.
I know, in the Technicolor film, they're watching everything. I'm like, oh, that's such a good observation. I hadn't thought about that.
Enjoyed that. Well, it's a touch of almost sort of realism, I guess.
Yeah, it is.
Maybe that was just in there for the people who, you know, hadn't really adapted to colour yet. They still liked a bit of black and white in their films.
That's true. Or maybe in this version, everything happens earlier on in, like, in the human timeline, so they haven't invented colour TV on Skaro yet.
Oh, maybe. I don't know. We could end up pondering for a while on that one.
Probably.
Is this the bit where we meet the whole Thal tribe, then?
Almost. So, on the CCTV, what the Daleks are hearing is Susan telling her granddad and, I guess, Big Sis and her would-be lover that they're these Thal, they've come here to this side of the planet or the forest or whatever because they want food. And the Daleks go, holy shit, dudes, we've got a massively awesome plan here. Let's get Susan to write a note saying that there is food here for them, and that way they'll come and it will set a trap for them. So she does, but as she's writing this note, I've got two things that piss me off about this whole note-writing sequence. So numero uno, she sits by a table on which, by the way, we again have the three lava lamps. She writes this note. In the background, we have the video feed from the CCTV camera. And as she's writing this note, or when she's finished writing the note, the doctor finds the camera and goes, that's how they know what we've been talking about. She goes, oh my God, you've been spying on us. And the Dalek goes, yeah, all we wanted was to get you to write this note. Now we have everything we need. So
is one of the things that pisses you off the fact that they can hear the Daleks?
Wait, no.
Okay.
Because I don't think they can. Like,
I wasn't sure if they heard them or not.
I reckon Doctor Who literally just sees the penis-shaped camera in the corner of the room. But yeah. It pisses me off that they get Susan to write this next to a massive, massive screen that shows a video feed from the cell she was just in. And she doesn't notice that it's there until she's finished writing the notes. When the Dalek goes, you've now written this note, that's all we needed you to do, she could just fucking tear up the note.
Yeah, she could. Can the Daleks... They can't write at all, I guess.
No, I would assume not.
How they've sort of achieved anything if they can't even put together some little gadget that will write. Makes you wonder how they actually built their...
Exactly, like, their suits, like, there's such, like, fine mechanics in there, but yeah. They can't maneuver a pencil.
Yeah, it's weird.
But also, why do they need Susan to write this note? Because this is the second thing that pisses me off about this. When the Thal get the note, they go, oh, it's from the little girl. How the shit do they know that?
Maybe a little girly handwriting. Yeah.
Point taken.
No. The Thal are not too bright. No. Maybe they just assumed because it didn't say, I don't know. Maybe just because when they read it out, they pictured a human voice rather than a Dalek voice. Who knows how these people think logically?
Oh, I see. Is this what you meant before? Like, can they hear the Daleks?
No, this is just me talking crap.
Literally,
like when you read a letter, you hear a voice in your head.
God, can you imagine everything that you hear ever, your inner monologue is in a Dalek voice?
Well, I'm thinking the Thal are so fucking stupid that because they didn't hear a Dalek voice in their head when they read it, they assumed it was...
A valid theory.
But yeah, so we have one dissenter among the Thal who thinks maybe the Dalek aren't quite as sincere as you'd hope.
Yeah.
One dissenter, and they tell him to shut the fuck up, and they go, their basket's at the ready, or are they going to get some food? It's going to be great.
Yeah, I reckon wicker baskets are the leather trousers of this film.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
Right?
Yeah.
In a petrified forest, how would they have any material from which to craft wicker baskets?
Yeah, could you conceivably do anything with a dead tree? I don't know.
I don't think so. It seems like you just have to tap one of those trees for it to crumble.
Yeah, which would have been a cool thing to see, actually, if they, you know, used their special effects budget a little more. That. But instead of a giant styrofoam cliff, that's...
I quite like that cliff scene.
Oh, fuck, that cliff scene was the scene where I was like, was this really in the cinema? so shit. And, like, I really don't mind films looking shit. Like, I appreciate that you couldn't necessarily do much on, like, a little studio with a small budget and that.
Sure.
You know, especially back then. But that thing looked just too terrible to be on the screen.
Yeah, okay. It's not ideal, but
I mean, it was. I prefer jumping over a chasm that you don't get to see to climbing up a cliff that you do see, and it looks really that shit.
Okay, dude, we are not there yet.
Yeah, we've gotten way better.
So anyway, Susan's back in the cell with the rest. They dismantle the camera. We get the exact same shtick as before. Yada, yada, yada. 347 goes in, gives them some food. They use the cloak. Kablamatron. Boom. Ian is about to climb into the Dalek. We now get not just Ian, like, disdainfully throwing the Dalek on the floor. We also get to see a Dalek hand.
Yeah, just a little glimpse.
Very cool. Screenshot on the website, people.
Yeah. I was wondering if we'd see more of that later in the movie, but...
No.
I was going to say, it's quite a nice little moment where Susan wants to look inside the Dalek, and they're like, no, no, no.
Oh, yeah, no, no, you shouldn't see this.
Need to see this shit.
That's true. That's actually kind of human in a way. That's, well, not to sound racist, since we're in the company of aliens.
Well, but, like, Doctor Who is a human here. Yeah.
Okay, fair point. But you're right, that's actually like a vaguely realistic, touching moment.
I enjoyed that, but at the same time I was like, oh man, I wanted to see it. And then we did get to see a little bit of it, so.
Yeah, I'm actually pleased that we got to see that hand. That was a nice one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so then, okay, so in which order do we get this? Because we get the crew, or as in the main crew, escaping first, right? Mm-hmm. They're inside the Dalek, blah, 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 blah. They head up a lift shaft. They're about to, like, John McClane thing down the lift shaft to Kablamo the Daleks that are downstairs, whatever, blah, blah. Listen to the original review. Watch the movie.
What? We have this weird moment where the lift doesn't quite stop on the floor, which lifts do. I've experienced that before.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah. Because they can't get the Dalek on the, like, into the lift.
The freaking Daleks live here. Is this a regular problem? Like, they're making means of getting around their frigging building. They haven't calibrated their lift properly. I mean, that must be super frustrating. Anything done if they have that kind of shit to contend with on a regular basis.
Yeah, and these lifts are pretty much exactly the size to accommodate one Dalek at a time.
Yeah.
Also, I think there may be some kind of blooper here. I'm not entirely sure, but I have a feeling that when they, like, we get to see the lift shaft or, like, the lift on a number of occasions, or lifts on a number of occasions, where there are no lift doors. You just see the lift, like, going up, and we see, like, legs disappearing, basically, right, as it ascends. But when Daleks turn up inside the thing, they've blown the shit out of 347, there are actual lift doors there, as far as I know.
Mm.
As far as I could tell. Possible blooper.
I didn't pick up on that, but yeah. Oh, well.
Anyway, so now the Thal are arriving. We get these incredibly slow pans. They've splurged on this control room. Like, so much money has gone into this. They just have to...
A long, boring shot there, don't we?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it takes for freaking ever.
Yeah.
So now one of the Thals dies, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so he dies because one of the major question marks that arises atop my head when I watch this film is, how does the Dalek fire extinguisher weapon work? Because fire it at Ian and he gets temporarily paralyzed. They fire it at this Thal, he dies. They fire it at the metal floor of a lift a little bit later on, and it actually burns through the metal like it's acid or something.
Yeah, it's like made of an obtainium or something. It just, they can do whatever they want with it.
Or it's intuitive. Maybe it has different settings.
Well, yeah, they probably have different controls inside their little Dalek hole that, you know, one's set to stun.
Their little Dalek hole?
Yeah.
Is that what you said? Is that how you propose having sex with one of those?
Oh.
Oh, sorry, I thought you said Dalek hole.
I had a little note from slightly earlier that just said, no way are they eating that food.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God, that's definitely a screenshot for the website. Barbara with a handful of shit.
Yeah. It was just diarrhea. Yeah. Like diarrhea after you've had, like, a bottle of red wine or something. But yes, he did, in fact, just pick up a handful.
A handful of just, yeah. And it's not even like, she goes, wait, I have an idea. And she doesn't go, like, in her head, she doesn't go, I'm going to wait to actually grab a handful of diarrhea until it's worth smacking it onto the Dalek camera lens thingy. She, like, just literally grabs a fistful of that shit and goes, I've got an idea, guys. And then you have to imagine that Babs is standing around with a handful of shit for at least, like, half an hour.
Oh, yeah, no, yeah, you're right, because of the time lapse, yes. I don't think they were given any utensils to eat that shit with either. I didn't notice any. Just stick their faces in it.
Well, later on, Ian's going to, like, literally stick his face in sewage. So why wouldn't Babs eat shit like, you know, a pet does? Anyway. Ridiculous screenshot there.
So we backtracked a bit on that bit. I can't remember where we were now.
Okay, so anyway, right. They have now... Yeah, one of the Thals, he's died. The crew are now back at the TARDIS with the rest of the Thal. And somehow, weirdly, like they say their goodbyes, they want to leave, and then suddenly they realize that the Mercury fluid link, or whatever it was, is still missing, that the Daleks still have it.
Yeah.
Like, it's a pretty integral piece of information to just forget about.
Yeah. I have a note here, by the way. It says, Doc clearly doesn't give two shits about the file. Flight.
Yeah, he doesn't care at all.
No. He makes, like, a half-ass show of, oh, I wish we could do something, but gotta go.
Exactly. Very much like Hartnell. Like, in that sense, you know, well done, yeah. Doctor Who.
Well done for repeating yourself, Doctor Who.
Yeah. But because the Mercury link thingy, the fluid link, whatever, is missing, they now need to... The only way they can see fit to retrieve it from the Daleks is to convince the Thal to wage war against the Daleks. Much like the original.
Yeah. So we have the little scene where he starts goading the Thal.
Mm-hmm. And yet again manages to do it, not this time by convincing Ian to play theatre, like play act attempted rape of a Thal, as he does in the original.
He's gonna kill your girlfriend.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I was thinking it'd be quite funny though if, having just lamped the Doctor, the Thal just like is like, what have I done, and just kills himself. The plan backfiring.
In character, though.
Yeah.
Would have been totally in character. Like, just commits harakiri right there. It's like, fuck, I can't live with myself.
Yeah.
I can't believe I punched Ian.
Yeah.
So, now we have the situation of, okay, they are going to split up again, and Ian, Babs, Hunks 2 and 3 are heading in one direction.
Still calling them Hunks this time, are you sure?
Oh, yeah, sorry, no. Thals 2 and 3 are heading in one direction. Oh, wait, hang on, do I have a bit of trivia about another one of the Thals? I'm glad you asked, yes I do. So, the other guy who plays, let's see here, what's his name? He plays the grey-haired Thal, like the Thal leader.
The only one who actually knows what he's doing.
Yeah, the only guy who's got his shit together. His name is Temesis in the film. He's played by a dude named Jeffrey Toon. And he also played Hebesh in The Curse of Peladon.
My name was a great trivia fact.
Jeffrey Toon?
Sorry. You were like, yeah, okay, I've got some trivia here. His name was Jeffrey Toon. That wasn't exciting enough.
Yeah, as though that weren't exciting enough, Jeffrey Toon also featured in a different Doctor, in an actual Doctor Who serial, namely Doctor Who and the Curse of Peladon with what's his face, John Pertwee.
Well, I look forward to more stellar acting in that one.
Absolutely.
Sorry.
The go-to line.
Yes. So we get some overblown music over the most tedious rock climb I've ever seen in my life.
Is the rock climb before or after they go through the swamp?
Oh, maybe it was after, actually, yeah.
I think it's after. And there's not much to say about the swamp. It's basically exactly like the original swamp trick.
Yeah, we don't see any exciting death thing. We just see a bubbling area where the Thal guy used to be.
Yeah, but... We get a land scream, the dude has died. But not just that, we get, like, Ian. The water there is fucking horrendously dirty. And Ian just goes, ooh, water? I'm going to splish some of this on my face.
I'm going to wash my face in this shit. Yes.
Yeah, and literally plonks his head, like submerges his face in swamp water.
That might be where my note that I put a note here saying, Ian, you fucking moron. I imagine that's where that related to.
I would say that's pretty relevant there.
I could relate to many other scenes with Ian in them, so you never know.
But also, not just that, when he submerges his entire face in swamp water, he also sees, because his eyes remain open throughout the entire... This guy is getting pink eye, like faux shizzle.
Definitely.
Under the water, he sees pipes, which can literally only be sewage pipes running out of the Dalek city. So he is submerging his face not only in swamp water, but in Dalek piss and shit.
Oh, yes. Well,
right? That's the only explanation.
He is not the sharpest tool.
Oh, God, no.
He is a tool, but... Yeah, I love that. I've never been out for a walk, but I'm going to wash my face in this swamp. Regardless of whether there's sewage pipes running through it. Like, not going to be nice, clean, refreshing water. It's going to be stinking kind of...
Yeah, gross swamp water is what you would assume at first. And then when you find out that there are pipes there, like, there must just be floaters all over the place. Like little Dalek shit pellets. Okay. Anyway, we'll screenshot that as well. Speaking of screenshots, I've got one thing in my notes here. Screenshot of Bab's ass as they climb up the mountain, which is really just
the only
kind of a hill.
The only redeeming feature of that climb. And I love they had the music they had playing over that was so gloriously overblown.
Dude, we haven't had a soundbite yet. Shall we soundbite the music?
Oh, please do, yes.
All right. Music soundbite.
The entire thing in its full glory will just add another 15 minutes to the podcast. That was a long-ish scene, and the music is so intense, and there is so very little happening. Yeah, just climbing a hill made of styrofoam.
Next to a mad painting.
Yes.
Which is fantastic, by the way. Like, it's a mad painting a la Star Trek TOS.
It was. It really reminded me of that, actually, especially the go-to one that they used in, like, 60 of the episodes of TOS. And ending credits as well.
Yes.
That was much more effective than the actual
cliff. Like, yeah, the crevasse.
Yeah, whatever it was they were climbing. Do you know what? Part of the cliff looked all right. The bit that they weren't climbing looked okay. The bit they were climbing looked like absolute shit.
Yes, true. Okay, they've ascended the hill. They are now going through tunnels. We get the same thing as before. As before, hunk number three chickened out. In this case, Thal number three chickens out and wants to head off. Then we have the cave in, and they can't go back. They now have to progress to the crevice. Crevice or crevasse, by the way?
I don't know. A crevasse, I think, but I rarely use it in my day-to-day conversation.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah.
It's a shame. It's such a good word. We should just use it more often. Try to incorporate it into your vernacular on a daily basis.
Okay. I'll also try to incorporate vernacular. We get the jumping over the crevice. I think it's a bad plan to be jumping over with the rope tied around you. I think you're going to get cut.
Right, exactly. It's like, let's not lose one of us. Let's lose all of us.
Yeah.
It's such a dumb idea. But it's exactly like the original.
Yeah. I enjoyed the special effects in this scene.
Which special effects? What do you mean?
There were no special effects in this scene.
I see.
I like the just jumping and not seeing it. That was in many ways more effective. Almost in a way like a radio play is effective.
Yeah, that's true. That is very true.
But Thal survives this time.
Exactly, yes. I was going to say, that's the only note I've made. Like, does that mean that this was maybe geared towards an even younger audience than the TV show?
I'm assuming that's the reason Susan's so much younger, is so you have an identifiable protagonist for the kids to...
Bingo,
you know.
Yeah, I think you nailed it.
I'm assuming that's the reason.
So in like true Disney fashion, no one can die. But except Thal number one, the dude from whatever it was, Curse of Peladon, he dies.
Yeah, maybe they had like they couldn't have too many gratuitous deaths, or maybe dying by falling was too realistic a way to die.
Maybe, yeah.
I don't know.
No, that's very possible.
Yeah.
I really enjoy the way that that Thal number two throws the rope at Thal number three before he dies, though, and it just hits his chest and falls down, like flops down like a limp penis, and Thal number three just goes, meh, I don't care.
Yeah, that was great.
It's pretty awesome. So,
such Kablam- a way with words, I really...
Sorry?
You have such a way with words.
Oh, thank you. One does try. So we now get to, remember I said I thought there were just two really nice shots in this entire film? We've already had one, which is the CCTV.
Yeah.
Number two, in my opinion, is coming up now. Unfortunately, it's cut short by the fact that immediately following this beautiful shot, the whole plot just turns a different shade of ass. the nice shot in question is from behind, following the Thal, which are just silhouetted against the city of the Dalek city, as they're walking through the forest, approaching the borders, like the confines of the city, which is a gorgeous shot. Mm. But then cutting to a shot from the opposite side, and everyone, including the Doctor with his, I guess, granddaughter bride on his lap, and little hand mirrors flashing lights at the Daleks, because that's going to help.
There was a reason, wasn't there?
Yeah, they were talking about, like, I want to say something with electromagnetism or something, but which, or whatever, but it didn't seem to make any sense. In the original serial, they're like flashing lights at the CCTV cameras, which makes perfect sense. Well, you know, as far as weird forest people having mirrors makes sense.
Yeah, it makes an inverted commas sense.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I don't know what this was about, though.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, kablamo, Daleks turn up. Wait, in what order does this happen? The Daleks turn up, like, the whole city opens up like some kind of James Bond villain's lair.
Yeah.
And the Daleks, in the meantime, have realized that their version of the Thal drug doesn't work, so now they're just gonna destroy the planet.
Yeah, we're gonna wipe them out, and we get another great bit of dialogue along the lines of, when shall we destroy the planet? Let's do it now.
Wait, that's an actual line?
It's not quite. That's not verbatim. It's something like that, though. They try to decide. They say, yeah, we're going to wipe them out. I was like, when should we do it? Let's do it now, or let's do it in an hour's time, or something like that.
They do start a countdown for 100 seconds. And I made sort of a quote unquote note of the time, and roughly 10 minutes pass until we get to 3 seconds left.
An extremely long 100 seconds.
Yeah.
It was. I loved the timer they had, the extremely antiquated, like, pieces of card with the number lit up back bit.
They have such fantastic technology at their disposal. They can whip up a neutron bomb in 5 minutes. But
can't make a timer where the numbers are properly aligned. Like, an LCD display would have been better than nothing.
Yeah. Did and actually, there is some sort of LCD display or some kind of digital number display in a later shot that just shows 01. I only have that in my notes because I thought at the time, like, wait, hang on. Is that, like, a later shot that has accidentally been composited into, like, the wrong point in the timeline? Because it shows 1 second. But it's, like, a red number on black, I think.
That peculiar sort of timer thing, that style of gadget appears a lot in Gerry Anderson shows.
Gerry Anderson?
Yeah, like Thunderbirds.
Oh, Thunderbirds. Okay.
Thing. Like, you used to see a lot of those sort of devices where there was this sort of weird backlit, but slightly misaligned numbers on a timer, or sometimes it would just be...
Because it's practically like an overhead DIA projector or something.
Yeah, something like that. I don't know exactly what it is, but the only other time I've ever seen those used is in... I've only seen these in, like, 60s TV shows, essentially.
Okay.
And I guess there must have been cutting edge at the time. So unbelievably shit. And there's probably more contemporary-looking things which would have looked much more...
Much better. Yeah.
But yeah, it is a very long, like, 2 minutes or however long it was supposed to be.
Yeah, exactly. We're in these 2 minutes. What happens during these 2 minutes is the Daleks open up their lair or their city. They capture the Doc, Doctor Who and Susan Who, and for some reason plonk them on that weird, like, light beam container thingy. Like, they're just captured in the control room, even though, like, you would just kill them at this point. I feel like they're just in the way.
Is this just after we missed a perfect opportunity to decapitate Ian?
I think, wait, no, this happens also. No, you're right. Oh my god, that's such a... That I was thinking the same thing, like, oh my... So close. We almost got rid of him.
Yeah.
But yeah, because in the meantime, also during these 100 seconds, Ian, Thal's number 2 and 3, and Babs have ascended another thingamajig and ended up behind these bars inside the Dalek headquarters. They've been chased up a lift shaft by a Dalek. they've killed another Dalek, another bunch of Thal have invaded. Like, all of this is happening in less than 100 seconds.
Yeah, it's weird how when something exciting happens, time seems to slow down.
I always thought it was the other way around, like time flies when you're having fun. Apparently, time just stands virtually still when you're having fun.
It's like in that Futurama when Fry drinks 100 cups of coffee and everything around him slows down, he just gets a whole load of shit done. If you haven't seen that one, it's a great episode.
I don't think I have seen that one. I think I need to watch that.
It's fantastic. I put here frigging lava lamps. That just...
Yeah, they're constantly in that stupid control room. I have a feeling, like, on set, they had three lava lamps. Like, maybe one of the producers turned up and he goes, like, hey, I'm contributing millions of pounds to this production. I found these, like, in my daughter's room. Put them on the set.
Do you think this was product placement? To get more lava lamps into these shots?
Yeah, this film brought to you by lava lamps.
Yes.
Oh, long story short, the good guys win.
Yeah.
Yeah. There is, however, also a fantastic shot before they win, when the Dalek commander is, like, giving his speech. This is the black and gold Dalek. He gives a speech to all the other Dalek troops, and we see this from the point of view of his nuts.
I didn't realize this.
Or rather, like, we see it from the point of view of his Dalek balls.
Oh, right, yeah.
Screenshot on the website, people.
I need to see this screenshot.
Kablamo. The countdown goes down to 3 seconds left. Ian actually is the one who saves the day.
Oh, my lucky number!
Exactly. He just ducks out of the way, gets all the Daleks' attention, and they blast the shit out of the control panel, which clearly, in true science fiction fashion, is enough to stop everything. Like, you just blow up the screen, and that will stop the... the nuclear bomb, and also, it seems, kill all the Daleks.
Well, I'm assuming that what happened there was, because they were being powered by the static electricity on the floor, the power went out, so the Daleks lost life force. I'm thinking that's what happened, but I couldn't be sure.
No, I think that's a pretty good theory. I think that's a workable theory.
Yeah, although they still had enough light in the control room to see what they were doing, so clearly there was some kind of light. I don't know.
Yeah, don't try to look for some sort of scientific reasoning behind this.
They cut the floor power out, at least.
That's exactly what happened. Because the floor power and the nuclear bomb controls were all the same thing.
Will the end, essentially.
Yeah, Ian saves the day.
With another one-liner that is a worse one-liner than you would actually say in real life.
Yeah, my lucky number.
Seriously, that's the last one of the film, and it's just...
It's not the... Okay, yeah, you're right. It is the... Wait, no, it's not the last one, because later on he's going to do, like, a little bit of a fashionista thing with the Thal cape.
Right, yeah.
And then Susan gets the shittest one-liner to end on, and that's something like, you're going to look a fool wearing that in London.
Yeah. I mean, she was saying what I was thinking.
Okay.
When are they going to wear these things? But, you know.
He's super offensive, by the way. Like, he puts on the cape and then struts his stuff like he's some sort of clown in front of them. Like, dude, a little bit of fucking diplomacy and decorum. This is like their heritage. This is like their cultural national garb that you're just playing around with.
Yeah, would you put on a kimono and do a stupid dance? I mean, come on.
Yeah, exactly. And why does Susan go, like, you're going to look like an idiot wearing clothes that they are very proud of in contemporary London?
Well, they've only just learned how to sort of fight. Do you think that would get them riled up now?
Yeah, exactly. They're just looking to pick a fight at this point.
And then we get some glorious stock footage.
Yes, we do. Okay, so thank God that there wasn't a second Cushing film that was set during ancient Roman times, because we then get the worst way of planting stock footage ever, which
they're running straight into the TARDIS.
Yeah, but also, like, has this TARDIS materialized at, like, maybe 2 inches tall? Because we see basically Romans walking over it.
Yeah, it makes...
It's just really dumb. And then, as though this film was not crap enough, we end on Ian losing his shit and just slapstick-esque running around, jumping about the TARDIS, pulling levers and pushing buttons and whatever.
Like, yeah.
One would assume affecting quite a significant level of damage to the very, you know, like, delicate controls of this time and space traveling machine. And Doctor Who just goes, oh, it's fine. Like, I'm just going to let this buffoon clown around my time machine. Oh.
Yeah, great way to end.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Yeah.
So that was Doctor Who and the Daleks.
Reviews.
What would you...
I genuinely had not even thought about what kind of score to give this.
Out of three.
Wait, out of three? No, dude. The scale is 0.0 to 5.0.
I know, I didn't think it was worthy of the original. I'm going to give this a 0.2. I'm going to give this a 2.5.
A 2.5?
2.4, that's, yeah.
2.4?
Yeah, after some consideration.
Okay. Do you want to maybe give a tiny little review as well?
I spend a lot of this thinking about what the fuck is going on with this scenario. Why is the Doctor a human? Why is he called Doctor Who? I don't know. I spent a little too much time puzzling over that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I just felt like it was entertaining enough for the first half. It's like, oh, this is kind of kitschy and silly.
Yeah.
And, you know, but to be honest, I just felt like it kind of fell apart and mostly lost interest for me towards the end.
Mm.
I just ceased to even really care about what was going on. And, well, we all know how it's ending up anyway.
True.
Yeah, it was a pretty bad movie.
Pretty bad movie. You still gave it 2.4, dude. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Okay, but, fine. Okay.
Yeah, it's maybe generous. I mean...
That's fine. You've got a big heart, man.
It made me laugh quite a bit. It's just I don't know if it always intended to make me laugh.
Okay.
Sorry, that's not the most well thought out review.
No, don't worry about it. I haven't given this any thought either. I think my review is going to be absolutely tiny. Just want to say, up front, the original serial that this is a remake of, I gave that serial 4.3 out of 5. Like, that is a massively high score for an incredibly good serial. This one, I'm going to give this
0.9. 0.9.
Yeah.
Now I feel mine was way too generous.
Feel free to change it if you like, but I don't want to influence you too much here. So,
no, you're right. I want to deduct a whole point. I'm going to give this 1.4.
Okay. Peer pressure.
Thinking a bit more about the scale, and I think, yeah.
Yeah, like, the only things, in my opinion, that bump this up is, well, it's just production value. Like, they added lots of, they made a metric nut ton of effort when it came to constructing sets.
Yeah.
But then the whole thing is just, I mean, it's a really flaccid remake of a fantastic serial. And it seems as though this film was intended almost solely for people who had already seen the original serial.
But if that was the case, why would you bother changing so many things? Why would you bother making the Doc a human?
Yeah, that's my whole point. Like,
if the people have already seen it, why would you just not keep the same backstory?
Yeah. I don't know, man. That's what pisses me off. Like, I reckon they suddenly have access to color. Like, now we can do something in actual color. The Daleks are the most popular aliens and whatever. The Daleks must have been considered one of the best episodes up until that point. They bring in Peter Cushing because it's easier to sell Cushing to the States than William Hartnell, which apparently is true, and Hartnell was apparently, like, super distraught about this.
Oh, wow.
But anyway, it pisses me off that they've taken something that is that good, repurposed it for the big screen, and just... like, they've rushed into these scenes that are really only there for the benefit of people who have seen the serial, but those self-same people are going to watch this film and punch themselves in the face because the film sucks such massive gonads.
And yeah.
It actually made me think a little bit of the Old Boy remake that came out recently. Like, the remake... utter pants. The original film, glorious and beautiful, but the remake has all these little hints, like nods to the original film, that if you haven't seen the original, you'll not know about, but then you see it. Or if you have seen it, you see the remake, you go, oh shit, yeah, that's like a hint at the original, but the original is a billion times better than this garbage. Well, that's what happens when you watch this film.
This is what happens when you remake things. Remakes are almost always shit.
Okay, that is true.
There are a few exceptions, but really, if something was good, don't remake it, because you won't be able to do it as well.
That's true. So whom was this intended for? Like, I don't want to give this film a full point just because, like, they changed so much that it's clearly not for any of the fans.
Well, I mean, having this slightly different setup where the Doctor is just Doctor Who, he's a human, he's just built a TARDIS, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That almost works in the context of this is just a new thing and we're not going to waste too much time on exposition, but you don't need any backstory for this.
Sure.
That almost works. But if that's not who that's saying not, then that totally doesn't work.
And I don't exactly. Know why. Exactly. Anyway, 0.9. Yeah, closing words. Fuck this movie. Listener. Okie dokie. We have a listener review, and it comes from Davis. Hello, Davis. How you doing? I half expected you to reply there again.
I'm doing good, thanks.
And we have Davis in the studio with us today. Rollmeister, do you want to start off?
All right.
Go for it.
I'm going to go ahead and start out by saying I do not like the Cushing movies. I found them completely boring and pointless. Sorry if you like them.
He goes on, I'm going to be honest. I haven't watched this movie in a few months, so my review might not be accurate. However, from what I remember, these movies were badly recreated replicas of the original serials. It's better for me just to make a list here.
Things I did not like. The acting. The characters being played by different people. I realise the Doctor has been played by 13 people. But each Doctor has been very different. This is just Peter Cushing trying to be the first Doctor.
He goes on, the Daleks shoot gas? And why were the Thals wearing wavy makeup?
He adds, Susan is 8.
Things I did like, the TARDIS interior.
It's kind of cool seeing the stories in colour. He sums up, as you can see, I'm not a big fan. I give this movie a 1.0, and that's being generous.
Yes, it is.
Slightly more generous than you, Leon.
Davis, what can I say? You still have a big heart. I'm glad to hear it. I totally agree with pretty much everything you've said here. Except...
the TARDIS interior.
Exactly. Right? Well, why do you like the TARDIS interior? I'm very curious. I'm going to post this review of yours on the website. As per usual, dude, thanks again for sending it in. If you like, add a little addendum. Tell us what you like about the interior, because to me, it just looked super messy.
Yeah, I'd like to know.
Yeah. Thank you very much, though. Awesome review. And people who are not Davis, please do yourselves a massive favor. Improve your lives by following this dude on Twitter. He is at ShrubThe, all in one word.
If I was on Twitter, I'd follow him.
Damn right you would. Speaking of Twitter, you can't follow Rawmeister on Twitter, but you can follow me. I am at Punkin. I'm sure you know how to spell that. And if you don't, please just guess. Any closing words before we do our little Facebook spiel?
Yeah, that was it. That sigh was while I was trying to think of an appropriate Ian line to close with.
That's my favourite number.
All I could come up with was that was my favourite number. Oh, these had soft centres too.
Please like us on Facebook. It is facebook.com/whobackwhen, all in one word. Subscribe to us on iTunes if you're not already, and if you like the show, give us a rating on iTunes and a review. Not that many people have done so, so you know what? If you got a spare moment, jump on over to iTunes and give us 5 stars. That'd be massively appreciated.
Otherwise, don't bother.
Thank you so much for listening. Who Back When will return. Oh, that sounds like a James Bond film.
Yeah,
Who Back When will return with a new Who review, namely The Unquiet Dead. JD and I did that one. That's already recorded. Spoiler alert, it's freaking hilarious. We will return with a classic Who review, that's Galaxy 4. And our next audiobook review is Sisters of the Flame and Vengeance of Morbius. That's a double episode, so be sure to listen to both of those in one go, because they are freaking amazing. Seriously, spoiler alert, great audiobooks. Thank you so much for listening. Be rad and excellent to each other.
Yes, do, please. Oh, I need to work on some catchphrases.
Rock on. Ciao, ciao.
Bye.
Who Back When?